You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to Trial of the Hollywood Sex Therapist Killer, the harrowing and tragic story of Dr. Amy Harwick, who met a tragic end when she was allegedly thrown off her third floor balcony by her stalker and ex-boyfriend, Gareth Pursehouse. Found clinging to life, but later succumbing to her injuries, Amy's death has raised many questions, with answers to be revealed in court. Join us as we dive deep into the ongoing trial of Gareth Pursehouse, the man accused of this heinous act, and as we seek justice for Amy.
No, it's not about passion. Look at the facts and look at the evidence. This is where a juror sometimes will get in trouble. Speculation. They start guessing or speculating about evidence that we never talked about. Witnesses who never testified. So don't speculate. Other evidence that you never heard of. Other evidence that someone may have mentioned, but it was never introduced. Don't speculate about what that would be. Attorneys. This is not about the attorneys. This, I like that attorney. I don't like that attorney. It's not about that. And I know you're not going to. It's not about the defendant, the defendant. How do I balance things out? It's not about that. What can a jury, a fair and impartial juror, consider? Well, consider what's in the circle, the elements of the crime. You're going to get a copy of those jury instructions, and it's going to tell you what elements that people have to prove for murder and for the special circumstance of lying in wait and all the other crimes. Testimony of witnesses. You know, there's a reason why this witness stand is so close to the jury. So you could be close enough to watch their demeanor while they're on their stand. How do they respond to the questions of attorneys? You can hear their voice. Do they answer right away? Do they hesitate? When Robert Koshlan testifies that Amy was this amazing person, is he just making that up? When he says, the reason I talk to people is because I want people to know about her, not just that she was someone's fiancée. There's more to her than that. So you judge the credibility of witnesses. Exhibits. You're going to get all those exhibits we introduce in front of the jury. You're going to have those back there so you can review them, including the videotapes, the ring videos, what have you. The law. You're going to have the law. Remember, you all said one thing when we're selecting a jury. We will follow the law as given to us by the court. And this is why you're going to convict them of burglary, of murder in the first degree, and the special search of lying in wait when he committed this murder. Logic and common sense. Aside from the law, you know what happened here. This is not a defendant who was depressed, and the depression made him go get nicotine, made him go get gloves, made him cover up cameras, made him wait for 3 to 4 hours. No. Logic and common sense. That's why you're going to vote guilty on all these charges. What is the truth? Well, the truth is not just because I'm telling you what it is. The truth is, who do the witnesses corroborate? Paramedics. Michael Herman. Her text messages about fearing this defendant, what he was going to do to her. What? The evidence corroborates only one reasonable interpretation. But he broke in with the intent to kill her. Does the defendant have a motive? Or is this someone who just got picked up from the street and the police officers are blaming this person? No. You have those text messages. You have their interaction at X-Biz. You have the anger he had. Physical evidence. The ring videos, his DNA at the location, one out of septillion, that's him. But you also have the ring video showing that it's him. Yet we spent so much time on different questions on these witnesses. Amy's injuries tell you a story of how he beat her. Not a struggle, a beating. They're not, you know, the same size and weight. They're not like fighting it out. Statements by a defendant that incriminate him. I just interneted your phone. Whatever he's telling other people. On those recordings, those jail visits. Whatever he's saying in front of those people at the X-Biz. You ruined my life, bitch. The reasonable interpretation of circumstantial evidence. So this is an important instruction. Direct and circumstantial evidence. Direct evidence is like we had a witness right there that saw them do it. Right? We don't have that. You know? In most crimes, you're not going to have necessarily a witness who sees the crime on the third floor of this bedroom committing it. But what you have is circumstantial evidence. Because circumstantial evidence does not directly prove a fact to be decided, but it's evidence of another fact or group of facts from which one may conclude the truth of the fact in question. For example, videos, physical evidence, defendant's text messages, victim's physical injury. So the circumstances, what do the circumstances tell you about what happened? And about defendant's intent. And you know, in TV, sometimes you hear all they have is a circumstantial evidence case, as if that's not better than someone identifying someone who could be mistaken about their identification. Both direct and circumstantial evidence are acceptable as a means of proof, and neither is entitled to greater weight than the other. So circumstantial evidence is as good as direct evidence. I would argue sometimes better, because sometimes you can't change the circumstances. You can't change the ring video. You can't change the DNA. You can't change him wearing gloves. You can't change the strangulation marks on her neck. So if there are two reasonable interpretations of the circumstantial evidence, it favors the defendant. However, if there's only one reasonable interpretation, you must reject the unreasonable interpretation that he just went there to talk to her. That he was going to cause himself some harm. That's not the reasonable interpretation of the circumstances when he's gloved up, covering cameras, breaking into her house. When he breaks in, he has a lethal dose of nicotine. You know what the reasonable interpretation is of the evidence in this case. So you reject unreasonable interpretations that he was there just to talk, that he was there to cause himself harm. You know, during this trial, the defense cross-examined various witnesses. My argument to you is this is what their defense basically boiled down to in those questions to witnesses. Shifting blame. He was, during the opening statement, Kyle said, defendant was so debilitated after seeing her. He got into this depression and Amy wouldn't talk to him. But like, Amy has a responsibility to talk to someone that acts like this? Why didn't the paramedics take her sooner to the hospital? Well, how does that change that you strangled her and that you threw over the balcony? How does that change that? There's excuse after excuse, as if the defendant is a child. He's a 41-year-old man who couldn't move on. She blocked him, and for that, you get this? Excuse after excuse. This woman, Amy Harwick, wanted to be left alone. She wanted to be respected. And he didn't do any of that. He didn't respect her boundaries. He didn't care. But the defense makes, and they're questioning the witnesses, excuse after excuse for him. And you should ask yourself, when you hear these questions that are excuse after excuse for the defendant, how does that change defendant's plan, evidence of his plan? How does that change that he's identified as the killer? How does that change his cover-up? Those text messages to women 2 hours right before he breaks in, messages to, laughing at text messages of other women within 46 minutes after throwing her over the balcony. How does it change her injuries, the strangulation, the beating? How does that change that? It doesn't. But it is a distraction. It could distract the juror that they keep pointing out issues that they brought up with these witnesses, which really doesn't change what he did. So don't be distracted, ladies and gentlemen. Focus on the actual crime, his actual actions, what he did here. You know, counsel kept asking, well, how about these Nest cameras? Well, they should have subpoenaed for the Nest cameras the very next day. And you heard the evidence. They got the videos. They don't show much. Defense counsel just threw it out there. Was there a camera on the third floor? There's no evidence that there was a camera on the third floor or that one was working. So why just plant that for the jury out there? Why not confront a witness and say, is this the camera we're talking about? Are these the videos we're talking about? Don't be distracted, ladies and gentlemen. Focus on the evidence. You are to consider all the evidence in the case. The law. So I'm going to explain the law to you in a moment. We've charged the defendant with two counts here. Count one is murder. So you're going to decide, did he commit murder? Did he kill a human being, Amy Harwood, without justification? You're going to find that it is murder. And then you're going to decide, your next question is going to be, is it murder? All murder starts off at second degree. Is this murder of the first degree? And I'll explain to you what gets you to first degree. It is murder of the first degree. Basically, what gets you to first degree is either it's premeditated and deliberate, meaning you thought about it, you considered it beforehand, or also murder while lying in wait. Did you catch someone off guard when you killed them? After you find that it's murder of the first degree, your next question will be, is the special circumstance of lying in wait true? Did he kill her? Did he catch her off guard when he killed her? And the answer is true. The second count is burglary. You can decide, did he break into her home? Is it second degree burglary or first degree burglary? First degree burglary is when you break into someone's residence. It's residential, where someone lives. There'll be a special allegation. Was there a person present when he broke in? Yes. We all know that Michael Herman was present. So you're going to find this true. And that's it. Murder defined. A human being was killed, Amy Harwick. The killing was unlawful. And the killing was done with malice aforethought. This language, malice aforethought, doesn't mean, it means he thought about it beforehand. In other words, it didn't just happen in that second. It was thought before that. I want you to, cause of death. There's an instruction that defines your cause of death. And that causes death if the death is direct, natural, and probable consequence of the act, and the death would not have happened without that act. A natural probable consequence is one that is a reason that a reasonable person would know is likely to happen. And I'll explain that to you in a moment. More than one cause of death. There may be more than one cause of death. An act causes death only if it's a substantial factor in causing death. A substantial factor is more than trivial or remote. However, it does not need to be the only factor that causes death. And here's why. Because a lot of those questions of the defense, it almost seems to shift blame to the paramedics, law enforcement, for not taking her to the hospital at a certain point in time. When Dr. Lucy said, after he dropped her from the balcony, her liver was lacerated, her kidney was lacerated, she suffered brain damage. Dr. Lucy said, had she been right outside the OR, the operating room, he doubts she would have survived with those severe injuries. So his act of strangulation is a contributing factor to Amy's cause of death. Then that's it. He caused the death. Him dropping over the balcony, that's the cause of death. You don't have to question anything about what time did they get to the hospital or anywhere else. He's caused her death. He has been a substantial factor in causing her death. Malice aforethought. There are two types. There's express and implied. So all murder starts off of the second degree. Express malice just means an intent to kill. And, you know, sometimes defense counsel make it seem like, well, how do you know what was in his head? Well, circumstantial evidence. Have you ever heard the term, actions speak louder than words? His actions tell you more about his intent than any words that defense counsel are arguing or asking their questions of the witnesses. Lethal dose of nicotine. That does not just happen out of nowhere. That does not land on his lap. He has to go get that. He has to go obtain that. It's a poison that if you inject it into someone, it may not be detected unless they're looking for it. So it's your choice of weapon to kill. This is worse than a gun. You got to go somewhere to go get this stuff. Her markings on her neck, strangulation. He's actually using his own hands to snuff the life out of her. That's a lot of anger. That's a lot of hate to do something like that. And he knows it's a three-story balcony. And I do hope she was unconscious. And she did not experience that. But he knows when he's doing that, that he's going to kill her. He's going to finish her off. So that's an intent to kill. You can infer from the facts his intent to kill. There's implied malice. It's intentionally committing an act. The natural consequence of the act were dangerous to human life. Knew that the act was dangerous. Deliberately acted with a conscious disregard to human life. Sometimes I use an example. If someone dislikes someone, or they believe that no one's home, and they fire shots into the home, but they don't know if anyone's there. They're like, I'm not intending to kill anyone, but I want to send a message to these people that I don't like, and they fire a whole bunch of shots into that house. Well, that's an act that's dangerous to human life. It's conscious disregard for human life, because you should know that someone may be in that house. There may be a child, there may be someone, and even though you're not intending to kill anyone, someone could be hurt and killed. That's a conscious disregard for human life. That would be an example of implied malice. Not in this case. In this case, for you to find second-degree murder under implied malice, you would have to ignore the fact that he brought a lethal dose of nicotine and that he dropped it from the balcony. You would have to ignore those facts. But you're not going to do that. This is not second-degree murder, but we'll get to first and second. All right. To get to second-degree murder, some of you may think, oh, this is intent to kill. He brought the lethal dose of nicotine. He strangled her. He threw her over the balcony. Some of you may say, and I'm not, you're not going to say this. It's not going to be implied malice, because it's not just a conscious disregard for human life. But it doesn't matter which one you think, expressed or implied. As long as you think it's one of those, you're guilty of second-degree murder. But this is an intent to kill when you look at all the facts. When you don't ignore the facts, this is intent to kill, express malice. So once you're an express malice, an intent to kill, because he breaks in, he waits for her. He has a lethal dose of nicotine. He strangles her. He drops her over the balcony. Then you have to ask yourself, is it willful, deliberate, and premeditated? That gets you to first-degree murder. Another theory is lying in wait, and I'll explain that to you. That gets you to first-degree murder. So either one of these theories proves first-degree murder. So let's go through them. Deliberate and premeditated. Willful means intentional. It means it wasn't an accident. Like, I'm not accidentally strangling her. I didn't accidentally have this nicotine on me. I didn't accidentally drop her over the balcony. Deliberate, formed by careful thought and weighing of consideration for and against the course of action. We're talking about a 41-year-old man, computer programmer. He knows what he's doing. He planned this. He chose Valentine's Day to do this to her, to end her life. He knows what the consequences are if he does this. He knows. He knows he's going to go to jail for the rest of his life if he kills her. This is not a child. This is not someone that doesn't understand what the consequences are. Premeditated, consider beforehand. Before he goes over there, he knows what the consequences will be. He knows what he's doing. That's all you need for premeditation, deliberation. You consider before, you know the consequences of your actions, and you still go for it. There's no exact measure of time. His is well planned. It's methodical. This is not like some person sees someone they don't like, takes out a gun and goes boom, boom, boom. That would be an intent to kill, by the way. And that could also be premeditated and deliberate. You have the gun, you aim, you make sure you hit a vital part and you fire multiple shots. That's premeditated and deliberate. So you don't need a long time. As long as you had enough time to think about what you're doing, think about what the consequences are going to be, and you decide, this is not an accident, I'm going to do it. A cold, calculated decision to kill can be reached quickly. The test is the extent of the reflection, not the length of the time. So here, we have one of the most, it is so planned out. How he has to weaponize himself with that nicotine, how he has to get gloves, how he has to find her house. So he found her phone, and then he had to find where she lived. Then he had to figure out how to get up there. He got caught off guard. Those Ring cameras were installed a week before he did this. And from the video, the way he covers that up, it doesn't look like he was expecting those Ring cameras to be there. Lying in wait. This is another way to get to first-degree murder. The defendant murdered by lying in wait if he concealed his purpose from the victim. Amy didn't know what was waiting for her at her home. He waited and watched for an opportunity to act. He waited 3 to 4 hours for her in that house, in her sanctuary, with that lethal dose of nicotine. Then, from a position of advantage, he intended to and did it make a surprise attack on the victim. Absolutely. Can you imagine the moment after Amy texts her friend about sending the photos at 1:02 a.m.? She still has to get out of her car. She has to unlock that gate. She has to walk to that front door, unlock her front door. She misses that he has broken the French doors. She doesn't think, like no one would think, that there's someone waiting for you, intending to not only cause you harm, but to kill you, who has that poison there waiting for you. So now she has to walk upstairs. And in that moment, she's carefree. Send me the pictures. We had a great night. She walks up, and it's difficult to say what happened up there on the third floor. She may have placed her bag in the bedroom, dropped her phone on the bed, then walked over to the TV room and in those closets or what have you, in that dark room at that moment. This is her surprise. The ex-boyfriend who's been trying to force himself onto her life, the ex-boyfriend she got a restraining order against 12 years ago. And so that moment must have been horrific. Must have been terrifying. In that moment, she knew, based on the email that she wrote, that he intended to cause her harm, she knew what was going to happen in that moment. She knew she was in the fight of her life. A fight that she would not win. So, some of you may think, you know, that's lying in wait. He killed her well and caught her off guard. That's lying in wait murder. That's first degree. Some of you may think, all that planning, all that workup, that's premeditated, deliberate. He did both. And it doesn't matter which one you decide gets you to first degree. It's first degree murder. Then as to count one murder, if you find that count one murders of the first degree, there's a special circumstance. And the law believes there's certain murders, the way you commit them, there should be more punishment. There's different special circumstances under the law. You kill multiple people, you torture them. There's different types. In this case, it's lying in wait. And it's has one more element that what gets you to first degree, and I'll show you right now. The defendant intentionally killed the victim, and the defendant committed the murder while lying in wait. What does lying in wait mean for this particular instruction? The defendant concealed his purpose from the victim. That's straightforward. The defendant waited and watched for an opportunity to act. He's waiting in her house. The defendant then made a surprise attack on the victim from a place of advantage. But that just means he's there, she doesn't know he's going to be there, and that's an advantage. And here's the extra element that you didn't have for first degree. The defendant intended to kill the victim by taking the victim by surprise. So when he broke in there and he waited, he intended to kill her. The intent was not just to harm her, not to talk to her, not with that lethal dose, not with him keeping the gloves on the whole time. Not with whatever that rope thing he had around his waistband. Not with him not covering his face and would be identified by Amy Harwick. So this special circumstance is true. So the elements of murder, a human being was killed, malice, with malice aforethought, that gets you to second degree murder. What gets you to first degree murder is if it was willful, deliberate, and premeditated, or if it's lying in wait. And what gets you to the special circumstance is that specific lying in wait instruction. Okay? Right to self-defense may not be contrived. The defendant cannot claim, well, when I broke in, all of a sudden she starts attacking me. Now, can you imagine? Someone breaks into your home. If someone breaks into your home, you have a right to defend yourself. You have the right to beat them. He can't claim, hey, she was attacking me, so I had to defend myself. The right to self-defense, the person does not have the right to self-defense if he provokes a fight or a quarrel with the intent to create an excuse for use of force. So get that. Let's set that straight. Now, the defense is asking, or may ask you, may argue to you, voluntary manslaughter. This is not even in the ballpark in this case, and I'll tell you why. That means the defendant was provoked by Amy. As a result, the defendant acted rashly and under the influence of intense emotions, which obscured his reasoning or judgment. And the provocation would have caused a person of average disposition to act rashly and without due deliberation, that is from passion rather than judgment. Remember, the key word, a person of average disposition. The instruction actually tells you the defendant is not allowed to set up his own standard of conduct. Well, that's the way I act. I act impulsive and emotional. That's not the standard. Your very first jury instruction reads, if you look towards the bottom of instruction 200, it reads, some of the instructions may not apply depending on your findings about the facts of this case. This instruction, given the facts of the case, will not apply for you. And here's why. Blocking someone is not reasonable provocation. You think that's reasonable provocation? If you block someone, they get to kill you? A person of average disposition would not try to kill Amy because she would not talk to him or because she would defend herself in her home.
Objection, Your Honor. So this statement, a bit of passion, to say that a person of average disposition would be inclined to kill, that is not the standard for heat of passion.
Well, that's his interpretation of it, so I'll quibble aloud.
Yes. And you can read the instruction. And that is, a person of average disposition, and I think counsel misread what I wrote up there, a person of average disposition would not try to kill Amy because she would not talk to him. Okay? Or because she would defend herself in her home. That would not happen. Burglary. This is very straightforward. Like the evidence in this case, it is very, very straightforward for you, ladies and gentlemen. The defendant entered an inhabited house, and when the defendant entered, the house, he intended to commit murder. So when he's breaking in, and he has that syringe, and he's gloved up, and he's covering cameras, his intent is to kill her. And the moment he breaks there, and by the way, his intent remains the same throughout his stay in that house and everything he does there. But the burglary is completed once he's inside. He doesn't have to do anything else. For burglary, you don't have to commit the crime as long as you enter with that intent. Degrees of burglary. Very straightforward. He broke into her house. Breaking into someone's house, that elevates it to first degree burglary. This is not like breaking into a commercial establishment or a store. And the house is where someone lives. So how does the evidence show you his intent to kill? It's not just that moment where he's strangling her. It's not just that moment when he's dropping her over the balcony. His intent to kill, you could get that from all the circumstances in this case, before the murder, during the murder, and after the murder. They all show his intent. So let's talk about before the murder. What's he doing? How's he acting that's telling you that he has an intent to kill? Well, we know they dated for about a year and a half. 2012, she gets a restraining order against him. Stay away. Cuts off all ties with him. She lives on her life. She obtains a doctorate degree. She becomes a therapist. She is cared for and loved by her friends. And then this happens, January 16, 2020. It's just sheer bad luck that she goes to a conference there on Wednesday, and then by Thursday, she's excited to go to this award show. She doesn't expect him to be there. He doesn't expect her to be there. And for a few seconds before she sees him, everything was okay in the world for her. But then you get these statements. You ruined my life, bitch. You know, the defense kept examining Hernando about this. He said, I testified. I heard that. I heard the tail end. Yes, they told me that he said that, but I also heard part of it. That's his testimony. By the way, is that something, you know, the whole you ruined my life, is that so different than the horror files and accessing them in 2019? Aspen Jamins has said she was in the middle of a conversation with Amy and the defendant just barged right in between them like she didn't exist. Because it's all about him. He's the one that feels entitled. I gotta be heard. That he had an angry tone. That's what you describe his tone. Angry. He said something to the effect, you fucking ruined my life. Does that sound like love? Or does that sound like anger and hate now? Well, Amy writes an email to herself later that morning. And you'll have it, and you can read it to yourself. And it's coming in for the state of mind. What her state of mind was of fearing the defendant. She would have never consented to him breaking into her home. She would have never consented to him just waiting there for her. Look what she says in her own words, the last paragraph of that email. I'm pretty nervous that I'm more on his radar now. It terrifies me that he's been obsessed for me for 9 years, thinks about me every day, can't move on, cries, and throws tantrums in this way. He's focused on harming me. He is focused on harming me. However, I'm hoping that the interaction and the listening and giving him time may cause a neutralization of his anger towards me. Is she describing it as his sadness towards me? No. She's afraid because she could see the anger in him. And she dated him, and she got a restraining order against him. And she describes whatever's happening at that ex-biz as tantrums and anger towards her. Not this debilitating depression that the defense argued to you during opening statements. Defendant begins to stalk Amy. And I'm not meaning this in the legal word, I'm just in general. He finds her phone on the internet. He will then find her house where she lives. He will then go to her house and break into her house. That's what I mean by that. January 17th, the day after the exodus, I internetted your phone. Her state of mind is she's afraid. And now this defendant, without permission, found her phone on the internet and is texting her. She has not called him since the breakup. Now he's forcing himself into her life. Why does the defense bring up that she may have Googled him in 2019? If she got a restraining order against him, and this is someone she's concerned about, why wouldn't she at some point try to figure out where this person is? Doesn't mean she reached out, called them, interacted with them. You have evidence that she didn't interact with him, she never called them. She tells them, basically in that last text message that she sends him, respect me, let's respect each other, and let's move on. So it's almost like she's pleading, please respect that I don't want to be in contact with you. But he doesn't respect her. The next day, she text messages, the same day, she text messages Fernando, Dr. Hernando Chavez, Garrett found my phone number online, messaged me. I told him I didn't want to talk and wished him the best. But his response was still obsessive, scary. Handyman comes tomorrow for more locks for my windows and order papers. Can you imagine? She has to go through all that. Like, she's living her life, and now she's got to go get a handyman to secure locks. She has to go out of her way to go get pepper spray because she doesn't know what's going to happen to her. Amy texts, thanks. I set a boundary over text, and I'm not responding after that. He keeps texting me and sounds unstable. Defendant does not respect Amy. It's all about his feelings, his emotions. He continues to send manipulative text messages at 2 p.m. and at 6:45. You know those text messages where he's groveling or asking her, let's talk, can we talk? That's manipulation. It's a 41-year-old man trying to force his way, in a nice way at first, back into her life. But it's not working. And she's going to cut him off. Amy does not have a duty to give him a hug, doesn't have a duty to respond. She has every right to cut off someone that acts the way he acts. Saturday, January 18, 2020. And he leaves a voicemail message, crying, trying to force himself back into her. This is all manipulation. This is all tantrums. She increases home security, new locks, and Ring security cameras. I'm sorry, Nest security cameras. Sunday, she blocks him. Now you're done. You're cut off. You're not going to have access to me. And that is what triggers a lot of these events. When he's completely cut off, he can no longer grovel to her. He can no longer leave voicemail messages to her, leave text messages to her. She texts Grace Stanley. I blocked him through text message, but because of his level of obsession, and I definitely don't think I'm in the clear, I have pepper spray at the house now. My roommate is on alert. I'm upping my home security cameras. Can you imagine living like that? Like, you have to do all that just to live? And so now the defendant is plotting against her. Now he has no access to her. Finds her phone in January. She's locked. This is premeditated and deliberate. When we talk about premeditation and deliberation, he finds her home and obtains a poison to kill Amy. And he selects a poison where he could get away with it, right? He injects her. She may go into seizures. She may vomit. They would have to see the needle mark to even try to test for that poison. And you know, he doesn't smoke. You hear that in the jail conversation when they say, oh, but you don't even smoke. He goes out of his way to get this pure nicotine. And he picks Valentine's Day. Why did he pick Valentine's Day? Well, Valentine's Day is a day where Amy, who's social, who has friends, would probably be out. She's either with a date or she's out with friends, which is what happened. And she is out with friends. And these are the last moments of her life when she was happy. You know, the defense in their opening statement mentioned there's going to be a witness, Elmira Menasaka, who's going to come in and say that he was depressed and all this stuff. You didn't hear any one of her or any friend come here and say he was so debilitated and depressed. And so what if he was? Does that mean you get to break in and kill someone?
Objection, Your Honor.
Okay. Defendant's actions speak louder than defense counsel's words about what happened in this case. Look what he's doing 2 hours before he breaks in. He's texting Natasha Paulson. This is 2 hours before he breaks in. This is all a cover-up. This is like sending messages to different women to show that life is okay. I'm not planning to kill anyone. Talking to this woman, I'm talking to that woman. And his text at 10 p.m. Oh, that's totally fine. That's totally fine, busy woman. I'm good. Just also trying to get everything under the sun done with whatever you want to call that emoji, happy face or what have you. That's 2 hours before he's going to break into her home. Also, what does his intent tell you about what happened after he drops her over the balcony? Angelique Judice, like within 10, 11 hours after the murder, he's setting up a date with her. What does that tell you about what he's thinking? And does he care that Amy's dying? No, he doesn't care because it's all about him. Did I get away with it? Did she get what I believe she deserved for blocking me out of her life? That is cold. That is cold-blooded. So, pursuant to his plan, he comes up from the empty lot from behind. And he gets caught off guard by these Ring cameras. and he covers them up. Does that sound to you like someone that just wants to talk to someone? Covering up cameras like that. Holding them down, and then they shut down. What's that thing around his waist? That white thing on the outside of his shorts? That looks like rope or something else that you could use to hold her down and inject her with that poison. If you want to talk to someone, well, why don't you just leave a note? I mean, that's kind of, you're going to freak her out. You leave a note, hey, I found your house, can we talk? He didn't do that. He didn't wait outside her home and say, hey, I'm here, which would have been horrible in itself. He didn't do that. He chose to wear gloves, have this rope around his waist, a bag on his hands, cover up cameras. He's not going there to talk. He's on a mission. You have Michael Herman, the roommate. Earlier, before the scream, he doesn't know exactly when, but earlier he hears like something like a dish breaking. Well, that's the defendant breaking into those French doors. He's committed. He's breaking in. I mean, that takes a lot for someone to decide, I'm going to go into someone's home without their permission. I'm just going to break this glass and go inside. And he leaves blood on the French doors and on the floor. That's his DNA. One out of septillion, that's his blood. And he has injuries consistent with kicking in that glass, breaking in there. Scratches. Not only bruises on the knees from landing on his knees when he's fleeing, but he has these fresh scratches. And he's wearing shorts, by the way, when he breaks in. And when he breaks in, when he breaks that threshold of her home, on his person, he has that lethal dose of nicotine. That's when the burglary is completed at that point. Let's talk about this lethal dose of nicotine. So we know the defendant doesn't smoke based on the jail conversation. LAPD criminalists could not confirm what that was, right? They couldn't confirm that that was nicotine. Dr. Bradley from the FBI, it was sent to the FBI, they were able to confirm that it was nicotine. Dr. Wu confirmed that it was 86.9% pure nicotine, a poison. Dr. Benowitz testified and said, that would have been a lethal dose had it been injected into Amy Harwick. And difficult to detect. Because as you see, they're not testing for this poison. They're not screening for this poison. Dr. Lucy, the H screen, the homicide screen used by LA, would not have detected nicotine. He would have to have requested it. There's a lot that went into deciding to get this particular poison. This shows that his intent to kill when he breaks in and when he's lying in wait at her home. So while he's inside her home with that nicotine waiting for her to show up, she's ending her night with her friends. And do you remember Rebecca Jalal describing how Amy loved tea? And they end their night, and at about 12:30 a.m., she's about to leave, and Amy does not know what's in store for her at home. She's being caught off guard and by surprise, which is why that special circ is significant. The way you kill someone, by catching them completely off guard, they don't know what's coming. She gets to her home at about 1:01, parks her car, texts her friend at about 1:02, Sarah Rollins, send me the pics on the green couch. Amy will never get to see that picture of her and her friend on the green couch because by the time it's sent at 2:05, she's unconscious on the floor, seizing. Here's why this is so quick. 1:02 a.m. is the text, right? 1:08 a.m., that's when Michael Herman is triggering the neighbor's Ring camera. That is 6 minutes. But that, I mean, it's much shorter than that, the time that the defendant immediately attacked Amy. Because you got to take into consideration, it's less than 6 minutes. Amy had to walk upstairs. She had to open the gate, do all that, get upstairs. That takes time. Michael woke up to an ongoing assault. He didn't, like, the assault started when he woke up. The assault woke him up, the screams. So it was already going on. It takes Michael time to get from the backyard, go around the house, climb the gate, until he gets to the neighbor's house and triggers it at 108. So the period of time where the defendant's attacking her is immediate. It's in a very, it's less than 4 minutes. So there's no talking, there's no discussion. It's she gets surprised by him, she's scared, and he attacks her. Defendant's actions during the murder tell you about his intent to kill also. So we talked about before the murder, now during the murder. Let's see what his actions tell you. Well, he knows he's bigger than her. He didn't show up to someone's house because he thought he could get a challenge. He knew he was bigger and stronger than her, and he was muscular. So at 1:02 a.m., he's up there waiting for her. And he's been there for 3 to 4 hours with a lethal dose of nicotine. He doesn't remove the gloves, he keeps them on. And he does not leave. Why didn't he leave? If he just wanted to talk to her and change his mind, why not leave? No, because his intent is to kill her. He's angry, he feels rejected. He knew what the plan was. That nicotine was for a purpose. He's gloved up so he doesn't leave fingerprints. He catches Amy by surprise immediately, and he wants Amy to know who's killing her. He's not wearing a mask. He's not wearing like a ski mask or anything like that. He knows she's going to be able to see who's killing her, and he wants her to know what happens when you reject him. Michael Herman yells out, "Leave her alone, motherfucker." And so at that point, the defendant knows either he's going to get caught or someone's going to come up and intervene in his plan. By the way, the term, this is a struggle, this is not a struggle. This is an assault. This is not like two people that can fight each other that are equally matched. This is someone that's catching the other person off guard. And look at all her wounds, assaultive wounds. She even had defensive wounds. Dr. Lucy said she had bruises on her forearms trying to block blows, consistent with trying to block blows. Amy fought back. She fought to live. She wanted to live. She scratched him. She got his DNA under her fingernails. She knew she was in for the fight of her life, and she was trying. But can you imagine the anger this defendant has as he's punching her, hitting her? You think he's holding back? He's not holding back. Look at those injuries that Dr. Lucy described to her face. Focal injuries, not injuries that you would get in the face from landing on the pavement. These are smaller focal injuries consistent with getting punched. So you have a 230-pound, 6'4" guy punching you in the face, who's angry. But she's fighting back, and she's marking him too, right? Michael Herman wakes up to blood-curdling screams. And the defense cross-examines him, and this is her roommate. He wanted to help as much as he could. He wanted to tell the truth. He's not here to hide evidence. He's not here to make up stuff against anyone. This is a traumatic experience. He didn't know who was up there, or if he ran up there, he didn't know if the individual would have a gun or he would get killed. And if he got killed, then nobody, you would never hear from Michael Herman. You would never hear about him hearing a dish crash beforehand, about her screams, about her body being thrown to the ground. Had he died, you would never hear any of that. He immediately calls 911 and says, my friend is being attacked, thrown to the ground. There it is. Why do we have to question, well, you didn't say this on this date, and 5 days later you said this. People are not machines, they're not recorders, and sometimes witnesses may remember, something may jog their memory and they can remember one more fact. It's up to you to decide, did he make up any facts? On February 17th, he left a voicemail message for the detectives, heard a plane crashing earlier in the evening. This is before any of that LA article that defense counsel questioned him. I mean, that defense counsel questioned Detective Masterson about. You know what's interesting? They didn't ask Michael Herman, hey, Michael Herman, let's be fair about this. Here's this LA Times article. Did you ever read that before calling the detectives and telling them on February 20th that she got choked? Did they confront him with that to see what his answer would be? No. They waited to ask Detective Masterson. He would not know how to answer Michael Herman's question. Don't be distracted, ladies and gentlemen. Focus on the evidence in this case. Defendant is wearing gloves. I'm going to take this off. Dr. Lucy said, manual strangulation is a contributing factor to her cause of death. Remember the cause of death? This is a cause of her death. 15 to 20 seconds, you could render someone unconscious. He also said, when he was asked, well, did he strangle her with two hands or with one hand? He couldn't tell you because he said, typically, you would be able to tell it's two hands because the nails will be embedded into the neck, and then you could tell it's two hands. Well, when you're prepared and you're wearing gloves, you're not going to leave those fingernails. Hey, motherfucker, leave her alone. He needs to get out. Defendant needs to leave because he wants to live. He wants to get away with this. He doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to die. He wants to live. He wants to get away with it. He doesn't want to be identified. He wants the life he's living. So at this point, according to Dr. Lucy, Amy was beaten and she's fatigued. She's not this, as the defense presented during opening, this athletic person that all of a sudden the defendant lets her go, and then she on her own decides, the way I'm going to get away from this is I'm going to climb on the outside of the balcony after being strangled. I'm going to have the strength to do that. It's ridiculous. Then they show this photo of her from over a year ago on the balcony where she's posing. Different, completely different situation. It has nothing to do with someone being attacked. It's disrespectful. The photo has nothing to do with this situation. If Amy lives, you know this. You know that if Amy lives, she's seen his face, and this defendant's life is over. She will identify him to the police, and his life is done. He does not want that, and he's going to kill her to make sure that she does not tell anyone what he did to her. And so her fatigued body, her beaten body, is dragged over to the balcony, and there's a blood smear there. And I can't, remember when we told you we can't always prove every single thing. That's not the point. Either he got it from his glove or part of her body, her face that was bleeding, got the blood on there. But you know, in trying to drop her over the balcony, he dropped that syringe. So when he's lifting her over the balcony, he knows how high that is. It's 21 feet. He knows what he's doing. He's going to finish her off. She will not be able to identify him. And that's pure concrete down there. Anyone would know. Even a child would know if I dropped this person, they could die here. But he's not a child. Dr. Lucy, what did Dr. Lucy say? Doubt she would have survived if right outside the OR. Given the liver laceration, the kidney laceration, the brain damage, it wouldn't have mattered. Injuries to the face are focal, meaning she's being punched. Defending pressing on her right shoulder. I don't know if any of you caught this, but there's an injury that where it leaves like a white circle here. There's pressing, and there's pressing on the back. So that's the defendant attacking her with his big hand. Manual strangulation, we already talked about that. Gloves prevents from knowing if it's two hands, but that's the point of gloves. The reason he got gloves is to cover up the crime. He doesn't want to leave fingerprints. He doesn't want to leave anything that's related to him. He wants to get away with this murder. And you know, then Dr. Lucy is cross-examined by defense counsel, and she's asking, well, didn't you tell me and this Aaron Mintz something else? And he says, no. And you know what happens after that? There's no Aaron Mintz that comes here and says he said something else. There's none of that. Dr. Lucy continued with his testimony. He said 15 to 20 seconds would render someone unconscious. Here are the fall injuries. Pelvic fractures. The amount of force when he drops her, it causes those severe pelvic fractures. Those are not caused by kicking someone or any other. That's caused by the impact of being dropped. So she's being dropped on her buttock area. Lacerations to the liver, it's that force of hitting the concrete that sends that shock and lacerates the liver. Lacerations to the kidney. The right scapula, there's a fracture on it. It takes a lot of force for that to happen, he said. The right middle of the head, brain damage. A lot of the right side damage. No injuries to the back. She didn't land on her back. She wasn't holding on to some rail and then landed on her back. His opinion, this is a homicide, not an accident. That's his opinion after evaluating her injuries. This is consistent with defendant picking up Amy and dropping her over the balcony and her landing on her buttock area, shattering the pelvis, damaging the liver and the kidney, and then the right side, causing the damage to the right shoulder and the top of the right of the back head. And then she just falls flat after that on her face. Not that she hit the face, because that had she hit her face first, there would have been severe fractures, which there were not. Defense during their opening said, what you're going to hear from Bob Malik, who places her on these 3D stills holding on to the railing with one foot on the awning, speculating that whatever damage was in that awning, she caused it. I mean, how do you get to that? How do you prove that was not there before this all happened? And how does she do a crunch after being beaten to hold that position? What we do know is our 3D expert created these 3Ds to help you understand the relationship of all these buildings and location of evidence. And he said he took a measurement from the ground to the floor of the balcony, and that's at 17 feet and 7 inches, and that report that he read from Malik was off by almost 3 feet for that distance. Don't speculate about what Mr. Malik would have testified. He didn't testify. They didn't call him. They said they were going to call him, but they didn't call him. So don't let that distract you from the actual evidence in this case. I'm almost done, ladies and gentlemen. I know you have this look like, how much more? There's not that much more, I think. All right. The syringe, he drops into the balcony. He didn't know he dropped it. Had he known that he dropped that syringe, he would not have left that there. He would have picked that up. In all that commotion and dropping her over the balcony, that fell out of his person. Either he was holding it or it fell out. It doesn't matter. He left that behind. Because now he knows that there's someone, a witness downstairs, Michael Herman, who's yelling. He has to end her life quickly because he has to get out. Because if Michael Herman is yelling, she's yelling, guess who else may hear this? The neighbors may hear this. So what are defendant's actions after he's done this, after he dropped her to her death? Does it show that he's depressed, upset, or does it show, no, he wanted to kill her? That was his whole intent. Well, let's see. The very first thing he does, Amy's there. You saw the body worn video. How do you leave a human being in that condition and not try to help? How do you not help her? If you loved her at any point, why not help her then? Why not try to call 911 so the ambulance can come? Because it's not love. It's hate and anger now. So he runs through the kitchen door, runs right by her. And I'm going to ask you, look at the photos of her body near the area where he would have to run by. It is so close. It's like right here. And so she, at this point, is in all likelihood unconscious. So much damage to her neck from the strangulation that it's difficult for her to breathe. And he renders no aid. Instead, he thinks about himself. He thinks about his survival. And he just runs right by her, breaks that arm of that statue, jumps over the fence, and leaves her to die. That's more of an intent to kill. He just leaves her to die. And he's still wearing the gloves. Paramedic Turner, who showed up and was one of the first individuals to see her, says, Amy was looking and appearing lifeless. And I cited the page in the transcript. Just want to get my language right on this. Amy was unconscious. She was not able to breathe on her own. A blood pressure of 60 is not sustainable for life. This is what defendant did to her. Her condition never improved while he was there with her. Never improved. So what's defendant doing after he leaves Amy to die? He texts us. 46 minutes later, he text messages Natasha Paulson. Ha ha, that's funny. I guess he felt he needed to respond to that text message at that point, 46 minutes after dropping Amy to her death. He doesn't care about Amy. He doesn't care about her life. What he's doing, he's covering up his tracks, acting like he was not the guy that was there, like everything's normal for him. Cold blood. A few hours later, he's going to be communicating with his Tinder date that he had from before, Angelique G. Morning, sunshine. This is at 10 a.m., about 10 hours after he's dropped her from the balcony and seen her body there. What do you think about that? 10 hours after leaving Amy to die, all he's doing is covering up. And she sees the black eye, and he tells her, from what she remembers, oh, I got that shaved. And at 4:30 p.m., they spent all this time together. So here he's killed his ex-girlfriend. And he's with this other lady, spending time with her. And then he's going to take her home in his Lexus. And then that's when he gets arrested. Because everyone has pointed to the finger to the person that Amy said, if anything happens to me, Gareth Persoff did it. She knew. They take photographs of his scratches, his bruises. Some of them caused when he tried to flee. Some of them when he broke into her house. And some of them where Amy marked them, where she fought back. At his home, you have these white tennis shoes. You have these shorts with the white stripes that look like the shorts on the camera. You have the gloves that have black at the bottom. Those may or may not be the gloves, but they look like that. What you also have at his home, they find this syringe with some yellow liquid, which is the same brand as the syringe from Amy's balcony. On his phone, It's a computer programmer, as we know. There are no text messages. There's no call log. There are no contacts. That's different than the data that you obtained from Amy's, where you had all that information, all the text messages, including his text messages to her. And look at two weeks later. That's his attitude. No, there's no remorse in that conversation. His intent was always to kill. And in a way, he killed the person that was causing him this pain, the person that rejected him. Amy's name comes up. Is there anything? Wow, sorry. Life lost. None of that. That's his attitude, not some depressive state, no remorse, doesn't care about Amy. So, I already told you the elements of murder. You get the second degree, willful, deliberate, premeditated, lying in wait. First degree, the special circs, lying in wait. And we've already discussed how you get to premeditation, deliberation, and the special circs of lying in wait. I'm going to end it with this slide. This is a reasonable doubt. It's the definition of reasonable doubt. I want to start off with what it is not. This is my last slide. It's not beyond all possible doubt, because anyone could play that game. Or is this possible? Is that possible? No. It's not beyond a possible doubt. It is not beyond an imaginary doubt. It's not a juror saying, well, I can imagine this and that. No. It's not a percentage. Did the evidence show this by 90%, 70%? No, it's not a percentage. It's not beyond a shadow of a doubt. That's a movie term. You don't even get that in the law. It's not based on a hunch. It's not a juror saying, well, you know what? I know the evidence is overwhelming. It shows he did it. It shows he planned it. It shows he had the motive to kill her. But I got a hunch that I missed something. It's not a hunch. It's a juror carefully looking at all the evidence. It is reasonable. That's the key word. It is a reasonable doubt. And the 12 of you get together and you'll know what reasonable is. It's based on the entire consideration and comparison of all the evidence. That means a juror doesn't isolate evidence. Oh, this evidence, there was issues with it. No, you look at the entire case. And what does looking at the entire case show you about his guilt? It's an abiding conviction of the truth of the charge. What does that mean? That means the jurors here would say, look, if they presented the same evidence that they presented in this trial during the 30 or so days we were here, if they presented it to me a month from now, I'd vote guilty on first-degree murder and the special search. And if they showed me the same evidence 20 years from now, the same evidence, same defense, same arguments from the people, and same evidence, 20 years from now, based on the same evidence, I would vote the same way. It's an abiding conviction for the truth of the charge. Ladies and gentlemen, Amy Harwick lost her life. She had a life to live. She did all she could. She did everything right. This defendant planned to kill her. We're asking you to hold him accountable based on the evidence and the law. Hold him accountable for first-degree murder, find him guilty of that crime, and find the special circumstance of lying in wait when he committed this murder to be true. Hold him accountable for all his actions. Don't minimize what he did. Don't ignore everything he did. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and break for lunch. Let's be back at 1:30. Have a good lunch, if you will.
More of The Trial of the Hollywood Sex Therapist Killer is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment of this riveting courtroom drama as we seek justice for Dr. Amy Harwick.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, Just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.